The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Andrew Dixon here for The Guardian podcast. You join me today on the banks of the Thames. I'm right in the middle of central London, just in front of the National Theatre, and it's a lovely spring day. People are jogging past, strolling around in front of the water. Difficult to believe, actually, that just a few hundred feet in front of us, inside the National Theatre, a new play has just opened that contains all sorts of darkness and sordidness and horror.
Bloodletting on a scale probably not seen that often in theatre.
Blood, guts, sexual intrigue.
Orgiastic violence, orgiastic vengeance.
So what is The Revenger's Tragedy actually about? I've been trying to get a handle on it, and it's actually pretty hard. The programme even features a family tree explaining who is related to who and who murders whom. Essentially, though, the story is this massively complicated spider's web of intrigue, revenge and counter-revenge, plot and counterplot, all ending up in the kind of murder spree that Tarantino would, well, kill for.
I'm Adjoa Ando, and I'm playing the Duchess in a marvellous production of The Revenger's Tragedy at the National at the moment. It's an extraordinary play. It's a proper Jacobean blood, guts, sexual intrigue, but enormously, I think ultimately it's an enormously moral play. You thrill to all the badness, and you see all the twists and turns of the characters, and you see all their moral dilemmas, and you see all the glamour and the sexual tension and all the political intriguing. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a hard and strong moral centre to it. And I think Milton's an incredibly angry writer. He sees this sort of way that society around him seems to be collapsing into some sort of moral vacuum where anything goes as long as you've got the power to enforce it, and people who have no power are just pushed to one side. And he sees everybody jostling for that power, and he's enormously angry about it. And, you know, because he's such a fabulously witty man, at the same time you get that anger dressed up in a lot of satire and comedy, and then you'll have comedy juxtaposed with the most violent, shocking things happening at the same time. So it's a real sort of feast in all ways, I think.
There are a lot of bodies in this play.
The body count is high. Yes, I mean, I suppose the obvious parallel is it's quite Tarantino-esque in terms of body count by the end.
A lot of people say that it's actually quite an anti-woman play. You know, there is sort of the violence and the sex and all that kind of stuff. How do you feel women fit into it?
People have talked about whether this play is very fair on women, and I think my character, the Duchess, sort of illustrates the sense of powerlessness that is the lot of women in this play. She is newly married to the Duke. She has three children from a previous relationship. I imagine that she has striven to get to the position she's in now, and she wants to have a future for her boys. She wants them to have a strong, continuing, lasting place at court. But when her youngest son is accused of rape and is brought to trial, and the Duke, her husband, seems to do nothing to protect him from the weight of the court sentence, she is in a fury. She doesn't have the power to overturn the Duke's decision. He is the ultimate power in this court. She doesn't have the power to free her son from jail. So all she's left with is the sexual power that seems to be the only currency available to lots of women in this piece. And so that's what she uses. That's what she decides to do. She cuckolds him. She chooses to cuckold her husband with his illegitimate son. The bitterest, cruelest punishment that she feels she can mete out in revenge for him not protecting her son.
Our heels are swift. Our tongues we play.
Wast ever known step-duchess was so mild and calm as I? Some second wife would plot his death, dispatch her double-loathed lord at meat and sleep. Indeed, 'tis true. An old man's twice a child, mine cannot speak. One of his single words would quite have freed my youngest, dearest son from death or durance, and have made him walk with a bold foot upon the thorny law, but 'tis not. and therefore wedlock faith shall be forgot. I'll kill him in his forehead, hate their feed. That wound is deepest, though it never bleed.
So I'm here at the National Theatre with Rory Kinnear, who plays Vindice. What kind of guy is he? I mean, he's an outsider.
Yeah, well, he's made himself an outsider. He has an incredible poetic skill and an incredible artistic skill. And I was thinking about how sort of different, trying to look at different books and what might get inside of the mind of someone like this. And the one I found most useful was this a book by Mark Everett, the lead singer of Eels, who wrote this book about the fact that his mother, sister, father had all died within a short space of each other, and that they'd all died sort of, in quite tragic and sad ways, and that various other things had befallen him, like his cousin and her husband were both on the United 93 as air stewards, and a roadie of his had died from the first time he'd ever had heroin. And just this incredible culmination of events, and seeing how do you keep going through those circumstances. And what he was talking about is that obviously your sense of perspective is sort of too enormous to make anything worthwhile except the fact that he loved his music.
And that's the kind of hook for you, this idea of grief powering this character through this sequence of revenge.
Yeah, and also the final act of revenge, and that his eventual act of revenge on the Duke is a quite artistic and theatrically creative, obviously, but it was a good one for the audience, but for him as well, that he's dressed up the skull of his beloved and poisoned it as a sort of a prostitute for the Duke.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the skull, because you look at this play and the image of this play, and as the hero holding a skull, a lot of people will think of Hamlet, and there's a lot of Hamlet in this play as well, isn't
there? Yeah, I mean, they didn't hold back in stealing from each other during this time, and this was written 2 years, published 2 years after Hamlet.
Yeah, so it's about 1606, something like that.
Yeah.
That's right.
But, you know, there's just as many echoes of Measure for Measure and Titus Andronicus, or, you know, the Spanish tragedy. You know, what you get in this, what they call the golden age of English playwriting, is that it's this new discipline that's evolving, and like, I guess, you know, within our lifetimes we saw the boom of the internet and how everybody quickly just sort of saw what everyone else was doing and tried to appropriate it for their websites or their web design. You know, you sort of see that in the sense of that golden age of...
So people borrowing things from each other all
the
time.
Yeah, and also, you know, the fact that after this, with Webster coming as well, and this genre of revenge tragedy, it obviously just went down big at the box office, otherwise no one else would have picked up on it.
It's furiously complicated, but if you're going to boil it down, like, imagine I'm a Hollywood film producer and you've got 25 seconds to sell me this play, what would you say?
I'd say, loner, alone in his room, decides to avenge the death of his beloved, gets involved in a world of courtly lust and corruption, and realises that in engaging with the world he has lost his own sense of self. I couldn't probably explain to you all the various subplots, but they probably come under the umbrella of courtly lust and corruption.
Fate's sunshine fast, strip cares for bed, our heels are swift.
Does the silkworm expend her yellow labour for thee? For thee does she undo herself? A lordship sold to maintain ladyships for the poor benefit of a bewitching minute. Why does yon fellow falsify highways and put his life between the judge's lips to refine such a thing? Surely we're all mad people. And those whom we think are not, we mistake those. 'Tis we are mad in sense, they but in clothes. 'Tis every proud and self-affecting dame camp for her face for this. and grieve her maker in sinful baths of milk when many an infant starves for her superfluous outside. All for this? Who now bids £20 a night? Prepares music, sweetmeats and perfumes, hmm? All are hushed. Thou mayst lie chaste now. Here might a scornful and ambitious woman look through and through herself. See, ladies, with false forms you deceive men, but cannot deceive worms.
Spread wide your wings, fly over our duke and duchess high. Lift up your silver voice and sing, when ye they wed, let love not die. Fade sunshine fast, come night, come velvet blanket of the day. Strip cares for bed, now shadows delight, our heels are swift, our hearts will play. I love you, be mine, angel.
I'm Adrian Sutton, I'm a composer, I've written the music for the Revengers tragedy, and that's been a collaborative effort with Different Gear. Truth be told, when I'm commissioned to do these projects, what I like is to be drawn into the story by the director. So it's within my nature to do my very best to respond to what the director wants to do. Having said that, what did appeal to me about this project was that it seemed to suggest a new direction for me, in as much as Melly wanted to get DJs, Different Gear, this is Quinn and Gino involved.
Normally, this is Melly Still, who's the director.
Melly Still, the director, yes. And now Gino and Quinn obviously come from a world that's more or less polar opposite to not necessarily to mine, because I've done a lot of different kinds of music, but their area is something that I don't have a lot of experience of previous to this. And it was an opportunity to intersect my musical world with theirs, almost like a kind of mad chemical experiment in some ways, just to see what happened. And thankfully, it turned out very well.
So, Adrian, what you're describing is this kind of fusion world of the Renaissance music and modern nightclubs and all the rest of it.
Very much so. It wouldn't have been the right thing to just put, you know, large bleeding chunks of one musical style against another. So it's a more satisfying thing anyway to try and find a new solution or a new musical language, really, which joins the two together.
And what kind of reaction have you had from audiences? Are people surprised and shocked?
Certainly, as far as the reaction is concerned, it seems to be very positive so far. You know, we've had a lot of people come up to us saying, "Oh, we need, you know, where can we buy the CD?" So there, that's very pleasing. And in terms of the physical reaction at the top of the show, without giving anything away, it's designed to be deliberately shocking, and it appears to be shocking people. So that's good.
So what, people are coming in, they start to see the show, and they don't quite know what hits them.
Well, as I say, without giving the game away, sort of, yes.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.